From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. On Monday of this week, President Trump gathered his cabinet for a press conference outside the White House to laud the new trade agreement that will be replacing the decades-old North America Free Trade Agreement. The new deal is to be called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. Here is what Trump said about the new deal.
It's my great honor to announce that we have successfully completed negotiations on a brand new deal to terminate and replace NAFTA and the NAFTA trade agreements with an incredible new US-Mexico-Canada agreement called USMCA. It sort of just works. MCA. USMCA. And that'll be the name, I guess, that 99% of the time we'll be hearing. USMCA has a good ring to it. I have long contended that NAFTA was perhaps the worst trade deal ever made. Since NAFTA's adoption, the United States racked up trade deficits totaling more than $2 trillion. And it's a much higher number than that. With Canada and Mexico, it lost vast amounts of money and lost 4.1 million manufacturing jobs and one in four auto jobs. Lost about 25% of our auto jobs, even more than that. Throughout the campaign, I promised to renegotiate NAFTA, and today we have kept that promise. But for 25 years as a civilian, as a businessman, I used to say, how could anybody have signed a deal like NAFTA? And I watched New England and so many other places where I was, just the factories were leaving, the jobs were leaving, people were being fired, and we can't have that. So we have negotiated this new agreement based on the principle of fairness and reciprocity. This is a terrific deal for all of us. Once approved by Congress, this new deal will be the most modern, up-to-date, and balanced trade agreement in the history of our country, with the most advanced protections for workers ever developed. If you look at the reviews, people that would normally not under any circumstances say good things, because automatically they have to say bad. Even some Democrats say that's amazing. We had some, they haven't been given the sound bites yet, I guess, Mike. But actually you had some Democrats say this is really amazing if he really got all of that. But by tomorrow, I would suspect they'll change their tune. But that's okay, because people know how good it is. It's an amazing deal for a lot of people. Likewise, it will be the most advanced trade deal in the world, with ambitious provisions on the digital economy, patents, very important, financial services, and other areas where the United States has a strong competitive advantage. Mexico and Canada have agreed to strong new labor protections, environmental protections, and new protections for intellectual property. So important. This new deal is an especially great victory for our farmers. Our farmers have gone through a lot over the last 15 years. They've been taken advantage of by everybody. Prices have gone way down. And we're working on some other deals that are going to make them very happy also. But this is a very, very big deal for our farmers. Mexico and Canada will be opened up a lot more than they are now.
That's President Trump on Monday announcing his new deal, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, which will be replacing NAFTA. My guest is Patrick Woodall, Research Director with Food and Water Watch and Food and Water Action. He's been a frequent guest on our program to discuss these trade deals. Welcome back to the show, Patrick.
It's great to be here, Sonali. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So Trump, of course, has portrayed this in this event as his fulfillment of a promise that he made, not just during his presidency, but even during his campaign. It was one of the main things that he campaigned on. And in a way, he sort of shamed Hillary Clinton, his rival, who then came out and said that she also was critical of NAFTA. It's something labor groups and environmental groups have been asking for years. And so now Trump is claiming success. Do you consider what has just happened success?
Yeah, I think it really isn't that big of a change in terms of of NAFTA, really all it does is bring in some of the worst elements of prior trade deals like the TPP, which we fought to get out of, into this trade deal. It's sort of a corporate deregulatory wish list that got into the trade deal and now is going to be there enshrined in this trade agreement for decades. So even though this is really about the Trump administration's rabid push for deregulation in all the agencies, putting this deregulatory language into the trade deal means it's there for a long time. And even after the Trump administration leaves the White House, there will be tools that the special interests can use to attack common sense protections for people and eaters and the environment for decades to come.
Now, last time we spoke, Patrick, there was a controversy around Canada's participation in any new NAFTA deal. And the US and Mexico had basically come to agreement. Canada might, you know, sort of risked being left out. Justin Trudeau is today claiming he's quite happy, Prime Minister of Canada. And among the issues that was at stake was Canada's dairy industry. What does this US, Mexico, Canada trade agreement, I still have to get used to the acronym, United States, Mexico, Canada Agreement, USMCA, what does that say about Canadian dairy industry?
So Trump promised to actually eliminate the Canadian dairy program, which has a number of parts to it, but they wanted to completely unravel that program. They did not get that. Instead, they got a minor increase in access to Canada's dairy market. So now the U.S. can ship up to 3.6% of all the dairy products that Canada consumes in a year, and over that, they will face enormous tariffs. In the TPP, for comparison, it was 3.25%. So it really is a small increase in market access for dairy products. They didn't eliminate the kind of the on-farm related programs inside Canada, the Canadian Dairy Farm Program portion. They increased the quota for the amount of dairy a little bit, and they eliminated Canada's a kind of Canada milk product that was being exported, which U.S. Dairy industry, not farmers, but the industry contended was really eroding U.S. shipments of basically powdered milk products overseas. So, you know, every time when this happens, there's a big championing of how much they got out of Canada. In reality, it's much less. The market access is not really amazingly huge. And they didn't eliminate the structure of the program inside Canada as Trump had promised.
I understand another thing that they didn't get was an issue around arbitration, but I want to get to first the auto industry. So on the issue of automobile manufacturing, from what I understand now, this is how Vox explained it. Automobiles must have 75% of their components manufactured in Mexico, the US or Canada to qualify for zero tariffs. What does that actually mean? Does that mean that these three countries and the auto industries in these three countries could equally benefit?
So this seems to be something on the more positive end, which would require that more car content be manufactured inside the three countries to qualify for the tariff benefits. Currently, it's 62.5%, and that means that some manufacturers could supply carburetors from Southeast Asia or somewhere else, and they could still qualify count as NAFTA vehicles as long as they had 62.5% content within the three countries. This ups that to 75%, which seems to be positive. I think there's still some details to be worked out as to what counts towards that content, but it does seem like a step forward for auto manufacturing in this area. I think there are still a lot of concerns about the manner in which this is going to work out, how they're going to count content and where the value is. Is it going to count advertising expenditures and stuff, or the people that work on those kind of things, the head office people, because those are mostly in the United States. But I think, yes, this is a change and probably one that's beneficial.
I understand that as part of the negotiated deal on the auto industry is an aspect of labor that also sounds potentially positive. 40 to 45% of the auto parts have to be made by workers who earn at least $16 an hour by the year 2023. Now, I don't know if that means just in the US or in all three countries. If it's all three countries, I imagine Mexican workers would benefit tremendously. And apparently, Mexico has also agreed to pass laws giving workers the right to union representation and extend protections to migrant workers and protect women from discrimination. And the countries can also sanction one another for labor violations. I mean, it sounds a little too good to be true. Is this really what is it what it is?
So I think it's important to recognize that the no labor unions have endorsed the deal yet, largely because a lot of the important components of these provisions are yet to be seen. Some of them are still in draft format, even though they've released the final text. Some of them are still draft or bracketed text. I think they are watching carefully to see how this pans out in practical terms. So I think the real question isn't, there are some provisions that are going to direct Mexico to eliminate what is called protection contracts, which are these non-independent unions that are affiliated with the companies, which are very common in Mexico, where workers are not even don't know that they're in these contracts, and it would eliminate those. But the question is really how, when would those be changed? Whether these worker protections in Mexico would be implemented, and how or if there would be real binding enforcement. So these are, are positive steps. They are positive steps to address some of these very important labor issues. There's real concern to make sure that how are we going to make sure that Mexico is actually going to implement these changes, and how are we going to enforce there to make sure that that occurs? So those are key elements. Whether or not these worker protection issues are actually enforceable, whether they get the same level of protection inside the new trade deal as commercial interests get, or whether it is going to be in the prior NAFTA sort of a side world where there's bickering on the side, but actually in practical terms, really no labor cases under trade agreements have been effective, and it's been very, very hard to make sure that you get the same level of enforceable disciplines for labor and for the environment and for other public interest protections as exist for something like pharmaceutical patents, where if the country doesn't guarantee the pharmaceutical patents that people want, then we can bring a trade dispute and enforce it through tariff penalties. So that's the real important difference and what we're really waiting to see. That's still in draft format. It isn't finished. And I think there are hopeful signs, but those hopeful signs really require real enforceable binding measures inside the trade agreement to make sure that they can actually have the teeth that are needed to make sure that the worst labor practices are eradicated in Mexico.
Patrick, on this pharmaceutical patents, what impact would the deal have if things don't change dramatically on access to life-saving medication and drugs? We hear stories of Americans here in the United States traveling to Canada just to be able to, buy their diabetes medication. Could this new deal have any impact on prices and access to drugs, access to generic versions of drugs?
So it imposes a 10-year patent monopoly on biologics, the kind of next breaking wave of super expensive drugs that are often used for treating diseases like cancer. So the US has a 12-year patent in our law, Canada has 8-year patents, and Mexico has 5-year patents. So in Mexico and Canada, it would increase the monopoly patent extension, would likely raise prices for drugs. For some drugs in all countries. And so this will be a real huge access to medicines issue. It's important to remember that the TPP had 8-year biologic patent monopoly protection. So this is more than occurred under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we opposed at that point, in part because of these essential medicine patent protections. And this is even more stringent.
So let's now talk about the environmental issues. There have been concerns, especially with the draft of the TPP, about environmental issues and polluting industries. And of course, given the way in which we've seen extreme climate events over the last couple of years, we know that this is an important issue. Also, the deregulation of short-term pollution and polluting industries in the U.S. under Trump has been extremely disturbing. Does this deal have any impact on environmental issues?
So again, I think the key issue here is the extent to which there are real enforceable measures with teeth to make sure that the trading partners and the global commerce doesn't exacerbate climate change and other environmental problems at the border and everywhere, really. And I think it's important to recognize that this deal doesn't even recognize that climate change is an issue, that the global trade in goods is contributing significantly to climate change in terms of truck traffic and freighter boat traffic, and the manner in which we're offshoring pollution. There are incentives essentially to move production to places where environmental protections are considerably weaker, and none of that is eliminated in this. Mm-hmm. Further, there are very significant deregulatory measures that are cooked into the text. There is a brand new chapter called the Good Regulatory Practice chapter, which sets standards for what a good regulation is, which really focuses on the cost to business, but diminishes in many respects the benefits of a regulation. It also mandates that countries have a regular look back to how regulations work with an eye towards modifying or even repealing regulations. And these are binding provisions. This falls under the enforceable provisions. If a country is lax in allowing these kind of deregulatory measures to be put into place, that countries can be challenged under a trade dispute and be used again, have tariff penalties if they don't open up their regulatory process to deregulation. It even has language that lets interested parties, which is really polluting industries, file to have regulations modified or repealed, and it uses examples such as if they're overly burdensome. So here we know what the context and the shape of their argument is, and that is regulations have very little benefit, they have a lot of costs, and that we shouldn't be worried about whether or not we're protecting the environment or consumers from dangerous products or a dangerous food, but instead should focus on what the cost to business is. And that's exactly the wrong way to go.
So on that aspect of it, this deal is a step backward, it seems like, on NAFTA. What do you make of the claim that this is not a NAFTA reboot, it's a brand new deal, or is that just semantics?
Well, I think it's more a charm offensive than semantics. It really is sort of the worst parts of the Trans-Pacific Partnership on deregulation, on pharmaceutical patents, on food safety, on crammed into the existing NAFTA text. There are some steps forward on, and there's still hope on the labor measures where there could be some improvements. I am skeptical that this administration is going to deliver real tangible enforceable benefits, but there's still hope, and people are working very hard to ensure that this could really reduce the outsourcing of U.S. jobs to Mexico. We've lost upwards of 1 million jobs. Thousands upon thousands of factories have relocated to Mexico to take advantage of low wages, poor work conditions, low environmental standards, and rolling that backwards is vitally important. But whether that actually comes to pass, we don't know, because the details are still not worked out. And so even the most hopeful people are really keeping a jaundiced eye on this and trying to make sure, because if it isn't binding, if there aren't real enforceable provisions with real teeth, then it is just window dressing. And we need to make sure that anything that does purport to protect the environment or for workers, it has real enforcement in the deal that is the same as the protection that the corporate interests get, to make sure that when other countries run afoul of their commitments on the environment, on labor standards, that they face the same sort of penalties that they would face if they ran afoul of the kind of rules of the road for corporations under the deal.
Patrick, we are given the impression that it was government representatives from all three countries, trade representatives, that sat down together and hashed this out. But as far as you can tell, how much influence did corporate America, did businesses and industries have on how this deal has played out? I imagine if they had any access, it was probably outsized access compared to any access that labor and environmental groups had.
So there are obviously, there are a whole bunch of trade advisory committees that help the trade negotiators. They are overwhelmingly stacked with business interests, actual companies and trade associations that represent business. A lot of the deregulation language, as I said, was sort of adopted from the TPP, where we know that the corporations had outsized influence on the negotiations, but it's amped up, it's turned up a notch on the deregulation side. We know that, you know, there are tons and tons of comments and efforts by the corporations to push for the most corporate-friendly trade deal they could get. And in lots of these sections of the deal, they really got, as I said, sort of a corporate deregulatory wish list cooked into a trade deal, which means it's going to last for decades, even after Trump's mischief is done in the federal administrations like the EPA and other agencies. It'll be hard to roll that back if these deregulation measures are cooked into a trade agreement.
So there is some sense that Canada is likely to pass, because of course none of this is set in stone yet. First, the final draft needs to be hashed out, and then you need the governments of all three countries to ratify it before it becomes a trade deal. I understand that Canada is likely to pass it. Possibly Mexico with incumbent President Enrique Peña Nieto before Andrés Manuel López Obrador takes power. Although even if it isn't ratified, AMLO has not indicated that, or has indicated that he is open to any NAFTA reboot. So what are the odds that Mexico and Canada will likely ratify this deal? And then what's the odds that the U.S. will?
Well, it's always bad to wager on whether these trade deals will go forwards or not. They're obviously highly controversial, and the devil's in the details, and people are still looking at them now. I think we do know that the outgoing president of Mexico will sign the deal on November 30th. They actually did the timing to make sure that he could sign it and not the incoming president. And then the question is whether they're going to push these in their respective parliaments. I can't really speak to the odds of this passing in either Canada or Mexico, but in the United States, these trade deals face a very steep uphill climb, irrespective of which party is pushing the deal and which party in the White House negotiated the deal. They are always hard-fought legislative battles. We expect that this will be considered under fast track, which means it'll be brought up probably in 2019 under a up or down vote. And we know that the U.S. election is only weeks away, and that will substantially, people think, change the composition of the Congress. So it's kind of very difficult to predict now what the outcome would be. I find it somewhat hard to believe that if there's an incoming Democratic House, that one of the first things they would do would be give a bad deal to a president that is widely despised in their party. So I think it would be harder for them to do this under a Democratic House. But, you know, it's still early to say. And again, you know, with lots of the details still not known, it's very hard to say. But these deals are always super controversial. They're always tough legislative battles. They always think they'll be easy, and they never are. Hmm.
Now, the Democrats under a Democratic presidency would be much more likely to be quite fine with any new trade deal that gives corporations benefits, because we saw, of course, President Obama push very hard for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and his party was quite willing to go along with it. So the only way that you're suggesting that we might be able to count on partisan politics stopping this deal rather than actual opposition to deregulation and business-friendly practices?
Well, I think the merits of the deal warrant the Congress voting this down. I mean, this really is a bad deal for people in the environment and community. So we're going to urge Congress to vote against this if it gets to that point. I think the real question is, obviously, the partisanship makes a great deal of difference on these, but remember that the overwhelming majority of the House Democrats voted against Fast Track, and they were opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's the reason they didn't bring it to the floor, was because they knew they wouldn't win that vote, and largely on Democratic opposition. The voices that have been talking about the corporate giveaways in these trade deals that have harmed workers, the environment, and the public have overwhelmingly been on the Democratic side of the aisle, who have been super concerned about the effect on manufacturing workers and on communities and on the environment and on food safety and on a host of these things that matter to working people every day. And so having these trade deals have special mechanisms to roll back protections that ensure that the food that we eat is safe, that ensure that the water that we drink is clean, those are things that everybody cares about. And that's where the fight has always been. These trade deals are no realm to make decisions about how clean our water and air is, how safe our food is, and how well our workers are protected and at their job sites. So I think there's broad-based opposition to these kind of deals amongst rank and file Democrats. This is heightened, obviously, because there's a whole bunch of special giveaways and because it's a Trump trade deal, which makes everything more complicated. But I think there'll be, everyone's gonna give this a hard look, and I think there's gonna be a really critical assessment of whether or not this is the step forward that Trump says it is. I happen to think that it's a giant step backwards and enshrines the worst kind of global deregulation into a trade deal that would be bad for U.S. communities and workers and the environment.
Well, Patrick, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for Food and Water Watch.
We are at foodandwaterwatch.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thank you, as always, for sharing your insight with us on this issue. Really appreciate it.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
My guest has been Patrick Woodall, Research Director with Food and Water Watch and Food and Water Action. We've been discussing the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement to replace NAFTA. It's still not a done deal, but it's close. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.